Coffee with Lucifer by Corgi Girl. Read by Jade's Fire. Only an idiot does the same thing over and over, expecting a different outcome. And so Jack only once crawled out of a stack of corpses at an aid station in France. His men were all dead, taken out by shell burst and machine gun fire. He'd come back to life and found himself lying among their cold, torn bodies, the mud on their uniforms streaked by dried blood. It was the dead of night, and he was alive. He stole clean clothes from a clothesline strung between the makeshift hospital and the morgue shed and started walking. 25 years later, and Jack was in another war on the same continent. His theory about idiots apparently hadn't reached the heads of warring nations. He was shot once and lived long enough for the surgeons to start patching him up. That time, he came back to life with the priest's hand marking the sign of the cross on his forehead, and the look of shock on the man's face stayed with Jack for decades afterward. He always wondered what became of the simple padre who believed he'd witnessed a miracle, and he certainly hoped the man didn't think he'd caused it to happen. That could really mess a guy up. Of course, for Jack, the problem with coming back to life in front of witnesses was no slipping away afterward. And so the second time he died in that war. It happened after he was captured behind German lines while serving as a spy for the British Army. He wondered at the time, when he signed up to be a spy, if the high mortality rate of the assignment might prove to be to his benefit. After all, surely, someday, one of his deaths would be the one that stuck. There was a short list, usually, of ways for a spy to die. Shooting and even hanging weren't the worst ways to go, because at least they were quick. But when Jack refused to give up any information, he wasn't that lucky. They poisoned him, and not with cyanide, which would have been fast, but with strychnine. He supposed they either had a truly sick sense of humour, or they were hoping he might accidentally spill his guts between the spine-cracking convulsions. But stubbornness goes hand in hand with immortality, and he died in agony. He came back that time as the first shovelfuls of dirt rained down on his naked body, came up out of the grave, gasping and clawing the air, and the prisoners on the burial detail shouted in fear and leaped back from the hole. And so the next time, faced with the improbable miracle of the uncooperative spy who rose from the dead, his captors starved him to death. Some deaths took longer than others to come back from. At times in his life when he'd been healthy, before something suddenly killed him, he'd come back almost immediately. Others, and he would remember this years later, when he looked back on the day he'd taken on Abaddon immediately after surviving multiple gunshot wounds, were a slow process. Not as slow as starving to death, though. It took him 18 days to die. By the third day, when he realised this indeed was the way it would go, he considered ramming his head against the wall until his neck broke. The problem was, though, that he'd likely come back to life before being removed from the cell, and he'd have to start all over again. The trick was to be dead long enough to get out, and so he paced incessantly, urging his body to break down fat and muscles that much faster. Near the end, he decided he'd probably become boring when the novelty of his impromptu resurrection had worn off. Maybe that was why they stopped bringing him water after the 14th day. The pain of terminal hunger was nothing compared to the iron-hard horror of dying of thirst. On the last day, he hadn't been able to get to his feet for several days. He lay in the foul straw on the floor of the cell and stared up at the sliver of sunlight that came through the barred window until even that was more than he could manage. He closed his sore, dry eyes, and he dreamed. He dreamed that he'd held on to Grey's hand that day, that his father had never died, that he'd never joined the time agency and never met the doctor. He'd never danced with a girl called Rose, and she'd never brought him back to life, to this endless, inescapable existence. In his dreams, he saw his little brother grow up and his parents grow old together. He found work as a schoolmaster or a lighthouse keeper far out on the peninsula, or he met a girl at a town dance and married her. He carried his own baby sons on his back when he climbed the dunes at sunset, or he walked up them with his lover one afternoon when they were both very old men, and the sea was always there, steady as a heartbeat, comforting him and beckoning him to sleep every night. And in the last seconds of his life, he realized it wasn't the sea, but his own heart he'd been hearing, until it suddenly stopped, and the dreams faded to blackness. He died, cursing it all. The sunlight on his face was thin and cold, and the ground hard under his body, as if his very bones resisted the pull of the grave, and he came back again. "Sweet Jesus, this one's alive!" a strong Scots voice said above him, and there were hands on him, pulling him out of the tangle of cold, dead limbs. He remembered the metallic taste of the water from the canteen, and how he gulped it down and vomited most of it back up, and the rough kindness of the soldiers who cleaned him up and wrapped a blanket around him. "You're naught but skin and bones, lad," the lieutenant who'd found him said. "It's a wonder you survived." "It is," Jack said, and his voice was just a husky rasp, like a whisper from beyond the grave. And the young officer held out a cup of coffee. He'd gone to the effort of getting some, a precious few spoonfuls done up in a twist of paper, from the American forces when he'd heard Jack's accent, and Jack reached out for it. His hands shook so that his rescuer had to guide the cup to his lips. The first sip was hot and bitter, and it burned all the way down. He wondered if this time, had no one been there to find him, if life would have at last lost its foothold in what was left of his body, and he might have died for the final time. But he had no way of knowing that, and no desire to repeat that particular experiment. The body puts itself first, always, and he couldn't bring himself to refuse the cup. The Scottish lieutenant, his eyes dark under the brim of his cap, steadied the back of Jack's head with one hand. He held the cup in place and fed him the coffee, followed by bits of bread, one life-giving bite and sip at a time. And when the cup was empty, his unasked-for saviour made a pallet of blankets by the fire and helped him lie down. "Be right here if you need anything," he said, and Jack heard his boots scrape on the ground as he tucked his legs under him. There was a clink as he set his own cup of coffee close to the fire to keep it warm. The firelight washed over Jack, and he closed his eyes. Eating and drinking had exhausted him anew, and he wondered what dreams lay in the darkness tonight. He slept for a second, and jerked awake as the memory of death, the charnel stench of the stack of gaunt corpses he'd been pulled from, came back to him, and he came awake flailing in the confines of the blankets. "You're safe," the lieutenant said, his strong hand, so alive and yet so very mortal, came to rest on Jack's shoulder. "I died," Jack said, "but I came back." The firelight gilded the planes of the man's face as he leaned close, and he looked like an angel spiralling down into flames. "That's all over now," he replied. "Get some rest." "No, it's not," Jack thought. Once again he could hear his own heart, as ceaseless as the sea, beating on inside him. "It's never going to be over."